Good morning, Santa Cruz. This is Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides from Jail, and I'm your hostess, Becky Johnson. You're listening to 96.3 FM Free Radio, Santa Cruz. And today's show is going to be kind of a grab bag portion, some lovely more tidbits from that Social Services Subcommittee meeting that I know you enjoyed so much on Monday. Sorry about that. Didn't mean to make you fall asleep at the wheel, you drivers. And we'll have some further interviews with Bathrobes Pierre himself, Robert Norris, from County Jail 8, where he is languishing in Orange. And we will have some updates on the Holy Cross situation. Get yourself a cup of coffee and sit back. And turn your radio up and enjoy this edition of Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides from Jail.
Also trying to get this Judge Barkley disqualified because he received an ex parte communication, a letter from Neil Coonerty, owner of the bookshop Santa Cruz, who essentially said that I should be jailed for a longer period of time. I was a bad guy. Violent characters, so forth and so on, or organized violent demonstrations and such. And
well, you have been pretty active over there in Santa Cruz. You know, I know you've been on the nonviolent side, and that the other guys make that part up. But I can see where some of them might really like to just lock you up and throw the key away on the three strikes, rather than have you in their hair anymore, Robert.
Well, you know, Neil Coonerty is, that may be, he may hate me a great deal, but to go after someone for serving free food and try to use that as a way to remove him from the scene, I regard as pretty low. And I think that there's a real issue here, not just for me, but for, and not just for Food Not Bombs, but for the society generally, for anyone who wants to maintain the rights of poor people in public spaces. I think you're going to hear from Becky Johnson shortly in Santa Cruz. I spoke to her this morning. She said she was going to call your show.
Yeah, she's due to call in about 3 minutes or so.
So I'm going to leave shortly, but she can certainly update you on the whole situation in Santa Cruz, which has really acquired a whole new dimension because of the actions of the police in essentially rousting a church either last night or the night before in order to go after illegal sleepers. And the issue of my being in jail here for serving free food is, in some extent, is a moot one, because San Francisco, though they have been confiscating food from Food Not Bombs on occasion at demonstrations, interesting, they do it at demonstrations and not at other times, they have not actually been arresting food servers en masse. They did one other arrest this last month, and that was Keith McHenry, when he started serving oatmeal outside my prison, my jail, in order to, they're maintaining a vigil at 850 Bryant Street from Monday through Friday in case anyone wants to come down and help.
What time, Robert?
I believe it starts at 8:30 in the morning and runs until 10, and that's 850 Bryant Street. And if you want to help, you can give a call to 415-386-9209. That's Food Not Bombs in San Francisco, 415-386-9209. If you want to write me, I can give you an address, or perhaps you already have it to give the listeners.
Why don't we, I'll write it down. You're going to need a pencil or a pen and a piece of paper.
Definitely, go grab a pencil.
Robert Norse Kahn.
K-A-H-N, right.
Okay, and his number, he's got it, you got to have
his number.
My number
around my wrist is 147-2209.
147-2209. He's in City Jail number 8, F Pod.
F as in Frank.
Frank Pod. F-P-O-D. F Pod 41B. And that's at 425 7th Street, San Francisco 94103.
And I also urge people to write a letter, even before you write a letter to me, write a letter to the paper about the injustice of arresting people for sleeping or for sitting down. I understand Palo Alto is facing an anti-homeless law very soon. That's going to be a real disgrace.
When I'm in about 3 minutes or so, I'll be talking with Becky Johnson, who's been active in Santa Cruz, and I've been doing a lot of work with the local Food Not Bombs chapter in Palo Alto, trying to prevent this sitting on the sidewalk ordinance from going through. So in the last 15 minutes, we'll be talking about what's happening right in our own communities here, folks, down in the South Bay. It's not just up in big, bad San Francisco that they're hauling people off to spend 2 months in jail for trying to feed somebody. It's happening right around us. In Palo Alto, Robert, we've been making a serious investigation, and as far as we can find out, there is zero problem in that city caused by people sitting on the sidewalk. If there's no problem, why are we about to pass an ordinance that's going to throw people into jail?
Merchant paranoia, and unfortunately it's political election time, and the politicians are jumping on the bandwagon. Arrest the prostitutes, harass the homeless, you know, generate a little bogus support. And I really hope that people stand firm and speak about the importance of elementary human decency in situations like this, the right of people to sleep at night, the right of people to use public spaces even if they're poor, and the right of people to share food with each other unhindered by the political imperatives of whatever regime is in power.
Well, good luck to you, Robert. I hope that you survive whatever time you're still going to have to do there in City Jail Number 8. Just quickly, how have you felt? Are you getting along okay?
What's I'm doing good, feeling? But if people want to come and visit, their visiting hours are 12 to 1:30 on July 4th and on Saturdays. And on Sundays, they're from 9 to 11. You got to show up at 8. You got to show up early in the morning usually to sign up. But if you're a hardy soul and you want to check out somebody in an orange jumpsuit for 20 minutes, that's where I'll be.
Right. I think it's good for all of us to drop into jail once in a while and see just what those places are like. And I know this is too much of a good thing for you, Robert. I hope that whatever pressure is being put on from the outside, and Food Not Bombs and Keith McHenry are helping to do that, that you may not have to do the full time, but whatever period of time you do, it's ridiculous that you should be there.
Write a letter to the paper and phone a local talk show, talk about the issue. That's the way to change it.
Okay, thanks very much to Robert Norse Kahn, and I'm going to hang up now, Robert, and hope that Becky calls me in the next minute or so, and we'll be on the air with her.
Thanks a lot, Purusha.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
The program is Purusha's Views. The views expressed are those of the people who are expressing them, not necessarily those of the management or anything. And while I wait for my other call, which may be right now, let's see. KKUP. Oh, hi, Becky. Hold on. Now, we've got her put down. You should be on the air now, Becky. Tell me where you're calling from.
Hi, I'm calling from Santa Cruz, California this morning.
Okay, we just hung up with Robert Norse Kahn a few moments ago from Jail Number 8 up in San Francisco. Now, we know that all sorts of bad things happen in the big city, but I live in Palo Alto, where they're trying to do some outrageous things, and I hear that Santa Cruz has been in the forefront of finding more and more ingenious kind of torments for the people who are unfortunate enough in this society to be too poor to rent a domicile for the night. What's happening down there?
Well, first off, we have a protest that's been waging at City Hall for the last 126 days. It's the City Hall Sleepers Protest, and it's a group of approximately half homeless and then half homeless supporters who are protesting portions of the city's camping ban law, specifically the ban prohibiting people from sleeping between the hours of 11 p.m. and 8:30 a.m., the law which prevents covering up with blankets between the hours of 11 p.m. and 8:30 a.m. And then we're also asking that the actual camping ordinance be modified, the camping clause of the camping ordinance, so that it more specifically defines camping as the setting up of a tent, cooking facilities, picnic tables, weenie roasts, that sort of thing, rather, because what we're finding is that the law is too vague in the way it's written, and it's allowing police to ticket people on a 24-hour period. For instance, a homeless person could sit in the park, and during a legal hour, they could put a piece of cardboard underneath them, and the police will come by and give them a $162 ticket for setting up an encampment with the intent of spending the night.
Have they actually been giving out tickets that are that outrageous? What's the practice?
There have been cases. It's a very selective enforcement process.
It always is, isn't it, Becky? It seems to me, in Palo Alto, I've heard him recently say specifically, we don't intend to enforce this about sitting on the sidewalk, of course. It just might be a problem, and therefore we're going to have it on there. Then you give the police a very vague kind of set of instructions, and they can just about run it the way they want to.
Well, yeah, we've had some bizarre police interpretations of these various ordinances. There was even a case of a man who was one of the protesters at City Hall, and he was there about 4 in the morning, and the police came by and ticketed him for bedding, and he had no bedding. He was just lying down on the bricks, and yet, so that's very creative.
Yeah, that gets off into the area that you'd almost think was a lie, wouldn't you? Robert just told me that there was an outrage at a church in Santa Cruz within the last few days. What's
just
the detail?
Right. Well, Holy Cross here in Santa Cruz has been very quietly allowing homeless people to come up and both park, those homeless people have vehicles to park in the parking lot of Holy Cross. And then also a group of homeless people have been setting up sleeping bags on some of the grounds there as well and spending the night. And as the word got out, you know, more people came because there's no legal place for homeless people to sleep in the city of Santa Cruz. And this very brave Reverend Mike Marini has both, you know, just seen the great need for homeless people to have a place to sleep, a place to be. He was basically allowing this. And one person in the community wrote a complaint. And it was typically one of these, I don't want this in my backyard kind of complaints. Another thing she said was, I'm feeling less and less secure. This is the idea that people who live in homes are fearful of the homeless. Just, you know, if they see them or they are near them, that they're somehow in danger from the homeless people. Based apparently on this one complaint, the city decided to crack down and shut down this church's ability to provide a place for homeless people to sleep.
Yeah, I know the sort of person that you're talking about. I go to a lot of these meetings, and there are certain people who show up or who write letters to the local newspaper, although I must say that down in Palo Alto in the last month or so, both in the Mercury News and in the Palo Alto Weekly and the Palo Alto Daily News, in all three of them, they've run a lot of letters, and they've run 95 or 99% against an ordinance preventing sitting or lying on the sidewalk. Still, there are people who write and say, in essence, I am afraid to go out on the street because I see people out there with signs saying they want money, and I'm afraid they might be unpleasant to me. I'm afraid that I might be asked for money. I don't believe that people like that should be out where we have to watch them. If you don't make it a crime for them to be there, I'm going to take my business somewhere else. Either I won't buy in your stores or I'll close my business. Various threats. And then one or two people will say, well, when I get off work and walk to my car, I'm worried that somebody might bother me. And this is the input that the councils usually get and usually act upon.
Mm-hmm.
And very often I recognize the same people that are coming back saying it again and again. At the last hearing about spending $217,000 in Palo Alto for 5 more police officers, there were over 30 people who wanted to speak against it, and the council said, we heard the opposition to it a week ago. We don't have any time to listen to you. They then talked among themselves for 3 hours and 40 minutes without ever once mentioning the fact that the $217,000 for the cops was 6 times as much as they're spending on the homeless, and that there was really no problem at all, that there were not more than 2 or 3 or 4 sort of obnoxious panhandlers that they were worried about. There's plenty of law and order available to take care of the handful that get out of control, and yet they go after the poor just en masse.
Just for being there.
It's a class situation, and it's obvious The idea is to get them out of sight, get them out of Santa Cruz and get them out of Palo Alto. And it's not an accident that those two places have certain similar backgrounds. That is, a lot of tourists come, especially to Santa Cruz. The business owners don't want anybody sitting around with a sign saying that they're poor. They don't want any of the people who are spending the money to have their conscience bothered. They want it to be quiet, to be orderly, to be neat, and for the people to come in and spend their money, and not for them to have to worry for a minute about the poor that can't sleep out there, that can't get enough to eat. As you can tell, I'm pretty fired up. Go ahead, Becky.
Yeah,
tell us what's happening.
Our shelter space here in Santa Cruz is unbelievably critical. During the summer months, we have approximately 60 shelter spaces per night, where, you know, legal places to sleep. And yet the homeless population in the city of Santa Cruz alone is estimated between 500 and 1,500. Nationwide, homelessness is 1 to 3%.
You say you've got 60 emergency beds.
60 spaces.
Palo Alto's got 15, and we have about 150 sleeping in the bushes, as close as we can tell without, you know, it's really hard to get an exact count.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it varies a lot. We, you know, Santa Cruz is a resort town, and just as we have tourists that come and go and the population expands and decreases, you know, constantly, the same is true with the homeless population, that it expands and decreases as homeless people come here and leave too. And so, you know, not having sufficient shelter space and then having these laws that basically make it illegal to sleep anywhere in the city limits, even on private property with the owner's permission, and the ticket is a $162 ticket for a person who's cited.
And if you're totally poor, in a situation where you've got to face all the shame that this society heaps on anyone who asks for help, and you are out there, let's say, sitting on a sidewalk with a sign that says that you need some help, if you get a ticket for that kind of money, it's like a terrible joke, and it means that the next time they catch you, they're going to throw you in jail, and they're going to keep you in there for a length of time that's going to be serious.
Well, there are a couple outcomes that happen. First off, you know, common sense tells you that if a homeless person had $162 to pay the ticket, they'd have $40 for a motel room. So, assuming that virtually none of the people cited can pay it, assuming they show up at all their court appearances and are convicted, they say, well, we can give them community service. This, in essence, becomes slave labor for the city. That, you know, homeless people are supposed to work for free.
Becky Johnson, but I've only got a minute or two left. What's happening at the vigil site, and how do people get in touch with you or the group that's fighting this outrage over there in Santa Cruz?
Okay, well, our next event is we're having a candlelight concert on July 5th at 9 p.m. in support of the City Hall Sleepers protest, and that's at 809 Center Street in Santa Cruz.
Okay, what's that date again?
July 5th.
July the 5th.
Friday at 9 o'clock. So bring a candle, an acoustic instrument, and we're going to, you know, have a concert there at City Hall.
Have people been getting arrested at any of these gatherings ever?
Only if you break the law. And so, you know, it's possible to be at City Hall 24 hours a day, and if you're not breaking any law, you will not be arrested. So if you don't go to sleep, if you don't cover up with a blanket after 11 p.m. or break some other law, then you will not be arrested.
Okay. Give us a phone number of some sort, will you, Becky?
Yeah. We could call the Common Threads Coalition, and that's at area code 408-421-9250.
Okay. That's the Common Threads Coalition, area code 408-421-9250. 421-9250.
And then there's a court case coming up on July 11th regarding two of our the defendants in the injunction that the City of Santa Cruz has gotten out against the protest. And there were two, we believe, illegal arrest that took place directly outside the courtroom, and so we'll be fighting that in court on July 11th.
Okay, well, our best wishes to you in all of this. I'm going to allow myself the last 30 seconds or so. Folks, the first hearing on the Palo Alto anti-sitting ordinance is tentatively scheduled for next Monday the 8th, but there's a very good likelihood they're going to put it off 1 week. In either case, Food Not Bombs will be outside the Palo Alto City Hall at 6:30 each Monday. You can come by and share food with us, help serve other people, and then you can sign up to go in and speak against these ordinances. We hope that we'll see you at 6:30 each Monday afternoon, and those of you in Santa Cruz, lots of luck to you and your fight over there.
Thank you, Purusha.
Okay, thanks very much to Becky Johnson. And the program has been Purusha's Views here on KKUP. Stay tuned now for...
Okay, and what you've just been listening to was an interview with Purusha Obluda, who has a radio show on 91.5 FM on Wednesdays between 9 and 10. I'm not sure that that's a weekly show, maybe a monthly show. But anyway, that's what you heard. First, Purusha had an interview with Robert Norris Kahn from County Jail 8. And then that was an interview that he did with me yesterday on the Holy Cross situation. Well, it does seem unclear about whether the city is ready to pull the plug on the Father Assisi-like atmosphere that the Reverend Mike Marini has created at Holy Cross, where 40 to 60 people, including teenage mothers with children, babies, and families with children, have been allowed to not only lay down sleeping bags at night, but they've Father Marini has also hired a security guard who has conducted regular patrols of the area, three patrols a night, not only to make sure that there's not trouble among the people staying there, but also to protect them from the rash of troll busters that has broken out in recent weeks. And we've heard some scary reports about gangs of... they're described as skinheads in the reports. They're very young, with baseball bats going down along the riverbed and assaulting homeless people there with baseball bats. This is bound to happen anytime that you have policies that are directed at a certain status of people. Now, a status could be people in wheelchairs. A status could be people of a certain race or a certain religion. A status is something that a person has involuntarily become. And so far, neither the courts nor our city officials have regarded homelessness as a status. And this makes... Listening to 96.3 FM Free Radio Santa Cruz. This is Becky Johnson, and this is Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides from Jail. Next, I'm going to play some of those promised and dreaded social Services Subcommittee meetings. This is a selection that comes from a meeting that took place on June 25th, where I was present with, among others, Mayor Mike Lotkin, Councilman Scott Kennedy, and Councilwoman Jane Yokoyama. So listen in, and if you're driving a car right now, I recommend you pull over and get a cup of coffee, because it'll be hard to stay awake for the next section.
As you run down the list of the different groups here that are being proposed for some additional funding, that Scott already mentioned the issue of the senior meals. Those are expensive. It's $1,300. I mean, it's cheap for what you get, which is feeding somebody for a year who otherwise is going to go hungry, I gather. I don't know where they're going to do if they don't get $1,300 from us for this person. If they've asked us for enough to fund 10 people at $13,000, we're talking about four or five, half of that hole, but they're going to have to come up with the money somewhere else for the rest of it, either through public appeals, which I think would be fairly successful for that particular group. It's just a matter of weighing. So I'm not disagreeing with the comments you're making. I just think the city budget, we're spending $300,000 more, or something more than $300,000+ more for new police officers to deal with various kinds of neighborhood issues that people complain about all the time.
I think it's how it's targeted and how it's put out there. I think it's right to say there's supplemental. Even the county has supplemental, but it's kind of set some parameters and some goals. And I think that was what my comment is, to say the city set some goals for the supplemental this year, not before the fact, but after the fact, saying we targeted programs that deal with homelessness and prevention of homelessness, and that's the basis of the allocation or something like that. But I just think it's important for groups who are going to go after supplemental funding to understand that. Otherwise, I think the groups just put it. I do think that the other issue that I wanted to bring up is that if they have a staff person, we don't normally fund staff people from our general fund budget. We normally put them under social service program, or we put them under CDBG if they're eligible for that. And so it's not clear to me if Community House is moving ahead this year, where that staff position is going to come about. The continuum of care money is really up in the air. And if you look at their budget, where those staff positions are coming from, they're coming from there. I'm not talking about administrative, I'm talking about, the social casework and stuff. And so if we didn't put them in this budget, how do they get put in? As an amendment to the social service program in the mid-year or later?
Year after year, but at least I've never been motivated to actually structure a program of supplemental grants for this. We tried to get the council to agree on a set of goals and put it out there, request it. Proposal. So I'm not opposed to it, but I've never done it myself. I've never brought it to the committee. So anybody can do it. The proposal would be good. But all we could do is take on the child care equity question, and that was just almost minuscule in terms of the tweaking from the stuff.
Yeah, well, we didn't exactly respond to the major overhaul of the equity study, but it might have suggested it was appropriate.
Yeah.
So, I guess I would try an amendment then that probably will fail, but along the lines of what I was talking about, to fund in the social service program contingent upon transitional house actually completing construction and starting operation. Their caseworker positions in the social service budget. Now.
Did you hear that, free radio listeners? Jane Yokoyama has renamed Community House. It is now Transitional House. But back to this exciting Social Services Subcommittee meeting that you probably missed.
Well,
that's what you're saying, that we put the money aside now.
And that there's some expectation that there's a source for them to have those case managers.
The bank called me up and told me I'm overdrawn. Some freaks are burning crosses out on my front lawn. And I can't believe it, all the Cheetos are gone. And just one of those days. Just one of those days.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I would try an amendment then that probably will fail, but along the lines of what I was talking about, to fund in a social service program contingent upon transitional house actually completing construction and starting operation. Their caseworker, their caseworker positions in the social service budget now. So
well, I would assume we'd be putting money aside and continue to be funding since we haven't approved the program itself. And
well,
that's what you're saying, effectively. We put the money aside now.
And that there's some expectation that there's a source for them to have those case managers.
Okay, and then try and cover additional social work, is that correct?
Case managers for the program.
Additional case manager support for the community house program.
They have, they have one and a half.
Depends
right?
on the level that it's going to start at. There's different startup levels.
Right.
One
would have second
Right, so probably one and a half is a realistic expectation, and it's what they put in their HUD grant expectation.
Okay, I know Becky, I assume Becky's here to talk about the community house, and maybe Chris was to come back and do that. I'm trying to deal with the concern that we not like leave public input out on that part of it. I wonder if it'd be acceptable to the bottom. I'm not happy to put that motion on the floor. It's okay. Second, for these would be ongoing commitments to the social service program. I'm recommending this to the city council for the meeting of July 9th in the evening at 7:30. Say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed. That carries unanimously. Now, Scott has also other one-time
I was recommending we do, at this point, two one-time expenditures. I also was expecting a written statement from Mike Marini from Holy Cross Church. We didn't get it, so I would drop that. But $1,500 to Westlake Venture School Daycare for supplies. They're trying to get on the cycle for more general support, but I think we should just do a one-time.
No, they made clear that these were one-time requests, and they'd be happy to have.
Well, they've requested every year.
Yeah. Okay.
So
this is a toe in the door, not a foot, but a toe in the door.
Scott,
and then,
Scott, could you explain about the $2,400 to Holy Cross? What that is?
It's withdrawn. So.
I just know that there are a lot of homeless people that are up sleeping behind Holy Cross Church right now, and that there might be some additional needs for Holy Cross to provide for their needs.
That's what Scott was contemplating.
That's why
but
I'm
giving
them money, but we don't have a written request for that.
We asked them to give us some request for what they wanted, and they didn't do it, so we can't do it now, we'll do it sometime.
Mm-hmm. All right. Okay. Thank you.
So then, New Life Community Center, what's the longer story, but they were seeking a significant expansion of services and went through this.
So that last speaker was Councilman Scott Kennedy. So, the reason I played that for you is because we did talk about the Holy Cross situation, which the council was aware of as of that date, and it was written on the budget request for $2,500 for Holy Cross, and then that request was withdrawn, and scant information was given to me. You're listening to 96.3 FM. Free Radio Santa Cruz. This is Bathrooms, Piers, Broadsides from Jail. If you'd like to have your issue aired on this show, please call 423-HUFF and leave a message on the HUFF line. This phone number has had some problems, answering machine problems in the past, but I believe the kinks have been worked out, so it is operational. So call and leave a message there for Robert or for myself, and we'll see that your issue gets aired on this program. Also, if you'd like to leave a message for Robert, you can call the Food Not Bombs hotline up in San Francisco, and he checks that regularly. And that number is area code 415-386-9209. So So give him a call, leave a message, and he'll get it. He will. I promise. And now I'm going to play for you a telephone interview from Robert Nurse Khan that took place on July 2nd. So listen in and make sure you watch, or make sure you listen. Having a little trouble make that transition from television to radio. Make sure you listen to Free Radio Santa Cruz 96.3 FM for Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides from Jail. Mondays and Fridays from 10 to 12 weekly. And this show continues despite the incarceration of the Bagel Man.
Hi there.
Yeah, how's the food in there?
Hey, the food is, it's actually very little. You don't get too much to eat. You get to slim down while you're here.
Are you losing weight?
No way. Not me. I eat lots of candy.
Lots of candy?
Well, you could get commissary, you know, you could buy candy in the commissary and so forth. If you have money, you can, you know, purchase snacks, so forth, but that happens once a week. But you do, the one complaint of the food is there isn't much of it, and it's, of course, imitation food. You know, you get sort of turkey this and turkey that, and you don't get real coffee, you get chicory. Hey, what can you do?
Hey, as the revolution comes within the next few days, do you have an escape route out of the jail?
I will escape into my mind. That's what we all do here in jail, as you know.
Yes, astral project.
We're astral rejections here, yes. We tend to reject everybody, and they reject us. Or actually, most people here are here on drug crimes. You know, they're nonviolent people mostly. Oh, no, there's some violent people, but mostly here on parole violations because of some stupid drug thing like marijuana sales or crack use or something like that. So it's nasty. I had a meeting today with the head of the legal services department because they don't allow anybody access to the law library from the new jail here. And the only way to get access to the law library is to actually go to one of the shittier jails, one of the places where they actually have lockdown cells that are kind of nasty and tiers, and you have little kind of six or 12 men cells.
The real jail, huh?
The real jail, right. This is the glamour slammer, as we say.
This is where they put celebrities and shit like that, you know?
What's that?
This is where they put the celebrities, you know, they catch some famous rap singer, busted with coke and beating up his old lady. They'll put him in a glamour slammer.
That's right. This is the glamour slammer, where they put Norse and all his cronies, right?
All you political prisoners and...
Right, all the political prisoners, we get to go into this cell, or this pod, as we call it. It's a house of about 90 people.
So, are there any other political prisoners in there?
All you political prisoners and...
Right, all the political prisoners, we get to go into this cell, or this pod, as we call it. It's a house of about 90 people.
So, are there any other political prisoners in there?
Well, I think there are many political prisoners in here. They just don't acknowledge themselves as such, and they aren't so acknowledged. They're, you know, people who are essentially like prohibition arrests. If people were arrested, for example, in the 20s, as I'm sure they were, for using or buying or selling alcohol, I would consider them to be a political prisoner because it's a nonviolent crime. And indeed, alcohol in some cases is quite medicinal. You know, it's used for different reasons, can be effectively used. In fact, in many ways, it's a much more dangerous drug than marijuana, which has much broader medicinal uses. But the people who use it and sell it for recreational uses, and you might say their motives are partially commercial, but their motives also have something to do, in some cases, with matters. It sounds like an incoming call there.
We don't care. What's the latest on Amnesty International?
Amnesty International is apparently still writing Governor. The last communication I got from them was a letter dated June 14th, which talks a lot about me and the history of Food Not Bombs, and discusses how Food Not Bombs is being hassled, or was being hassled, actually probably still is being hassled in San Francisco for essentially First Amendment activity, namely distributing literature and putting out the message of food, not bombs, in the most vivid and concrete way, namely by giving out food and denouncing the military priorities of the country, the bombs that are unfortunately the... bottom line for, you know, military budget, I think, is up 15 or 20 billion this year, thanks to the Republican Congress and Clinton's knee-jerk, weenie time, election eve, horseshit antics. I had a long chat with the head of the legal services today because I'm considering going on a hunger strike to open up access to the law library here.
Well, and I don't understand what the problem is. Isn't there a law library in the building adjacent to the jail?
Yeah, there is. But you see, they claim not to have the staff to walk a prisoner one block to use the law library. They claim that they do not have the staff to do that. And there's also some sort of very possessive, factional bureaucratic infighting. Each pod has its own management, and it's a big deal. The closest you can get to the law library is get yourself transferred to the jail that's actually right next to the law library, which in this case is County Jail 2 or County Jail 3, one of those being San Bruno, one of those being the seventh floor, the old jail, which is sort of a nasty jail to be in.
So both of those jails have notorious reputations.
It is true that although the head of the legal services, a guy named Nathaniel Harrington, had not heard of any rapes, he thought that rapes did go on in those areas, and so he understood my desire not to be moved into those areas, because I am quite an attractive guy. I mean, let's face it.
I'm a big boy.
So I told him, I said, will you represent me? He is going to represent, his group is going to either help me represent myself, or I'm going to, they are going to represent me in trying to get A, access to the legal library, and B, a disqualification motion for my sentencing judge, actually filed with the Superior Court. We're going to start with a writ of habeas corpus on Friday and actually try to do that. What that means is that at my hearing, I attempted to have my two-month jail sentence reduced to nothing, and I had to support everybody in the courtroom with the exception of the judge, who decided that he didn't want to change it one iota and gave me essentially the same sentence as before. But before doing that, he read to himself and gave to the defense and prosecution a letter that he had read, improperly received, improperly opened, from Neil Coonerty, Bookshop Santa Cruz owner and former mayor of Santa Cruz, who's a political opponent of mine, who recommended all kinds of made nasty allegations about me, recommended a longer sentence, if I remember it correctly, although, again, the exact memory of the three-page letter that he gave to Judge Barkley is not entirely clear. I just read it very briefly at the court. And then the judge sealed up the letter and said, this letter hasn't influenced me at all. 2 months in jail, period. And I wanted to say, look, we tried to disqualify him. He refused to disqualify himself. So now I'm trying to get a writ of habeas corpus to disqualify him take the case before another judge. And we can do this, though, probably by the time I get before another judge, I will be out of jail. But we can still have the sentence vacated, if possible. We can have it ruled that the sentence should not be 59 days, even though I've served it all. It'll be reduced, hopefully, to zero. And the judge will be told what a bad boy he is.
Bad boy Barkley.
Bad boy Barkley. That could be his new name in the street shit sheet if another one ever comes out again.
Are you complaining to the Judicial Performance Commission?
No, this is a hearing before the Superior Court. He's a municipal court judge, so we would take it before a Superior Court. And Harrington, the legal services guy here in jail, seems to think that we have a good chance before the Superior Court judge will actually hear the issues. My main concern is getting the Coonerty letter unsealed so that we can actually read it and bring it back to Santa Cruz so everybody can read what Neil is saying about me to the judge behind everybody's back. This is our great liberal bookshop owner, you know, the anti-chain man, Neil Coonerty, the head of the Downtown Association, who's...
Robert, why did the judge have the letter sealed?
I presume it was... The pretext, the reason he gave, the excuse was he wanted it not to influence the court or public opinion, and therefore it was because it was improper communication. In my mind, he probably had it sealed because he wanted it removed from public discourse and so forth. And had we had our wits about us, we would have said, don't seal it, or I would have read it into my tape recorder, which was going at the time. I was keeping a recording of the proceedings. But I didn't, unfortunately, and now we have to somehow get access to it, which I hope... I'm more hopeful now than I ever was.
Live and learn, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Hey, you shouldn't maybe give too much of your defense plans on the phone. You know, I'm just going to be probably on your show, Broadsides.
Yeah, try again.
Bathrobes.
Yes, again.
Yeah, Broadsides.
Yeah.
You know, so you might, you know, I mean, you'd be giving Coonerty and all your enemies a little bit of game plan on what you're going to do.
No, I see what you mean. Well, it's really no big secret. I mean, I don't, I mean, he did give this letter to the court, and it was, you know, the newspaper reported that it was read, and it was read before 100 people, so everybody knew. It wasn't actually read before 100 people, but 100 people realized that it had been given. And, I mean, all, I don't think that it has much impact. I think, I don't think, it's really a long shot that they'll grant any modification of sentence anyway. I mean, it'll probably be declared a moot question because I'll be out.
So what's important about it is that your case could set a precedent for more incarcerations for giving away free food. So if the sentence is reduced even after the fact...
Well, it does give a kind of an encouraging nod to people who are still apprehensive in this state and other states to help homeless people in the midst of the current anti-homeless blitzkrieg of anti-homeless laws that are coming down. I mean, I hear that in Quebec City, you know, people are, you know, in jail on sedition charges because they're giving away free food. They're part of Food Not Bombs. They're, you know, they're accused of overthrowing the government. The SWAT team invaded their house a week and a half ago in Quebec City. Maybe I hope that listeners have a chance to hear the Liberation Radio San Francisco's tapes on that issue, which are very, I suspect, are very interesting.
Well...
We're going to have a march and rally tomorrow at, 4th of July, so like that. And I was thinking about, you know, do some, you know, Free Robin North and the protest, the sleepers protest down at City Hall.
Uh-huh.
Want to be there if we can get everybody to come, including Sandy and stuff like that.
Well, it's starting at, like, 10 o'clock in the morning is the anarchist socialist softball game.
You mean on the 3rd or on the 4th?
On the 4th.
You mean day after tomorrow.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And that's at, the 4th of July we're talking about here.
Right.
And that's at, you know, 10 o'clock at Mission Hill Junior High.
Uh-huh.
We're, you know, and we'll be there giving away flyers.
And perhaps free food, who knows?
Free food? Wow, what a thought.
Yeah, that's an idea.
I think, you know, I think that the junior high schools and the high schools are really a prime target for people to, I think that homeless activists should consider. Not only with respect to the, you know, making people aware of the issues around the rights of poor people, but also young people who face a countywide curfew that is now being enforced outside the city limits, and that I think is even being considered inside the city limits. So I've always thought that the high schools are a good recruiting area to start working on, and I would suggest that
they're not in session right now. You know, they're out.
That's a good
summer.
Well, how about the summer camps? How about the kindergartens? Why don't you check out the...
For the game.
Go for the youth.
Let me tell you about then. So now what was happening on the 4th that you knew about, Mike?
We're down the candy and back away from the sandbox.
Yes.
Anyway.
Down from the jungle gym.
Anyway, don't worry. We're fucking blasting all the enemies and shit.
What are we doing on the 4th? What's the event on the 4th?
It's town clock march and rally. We're burning some flags in front of the
town clock. Town clock march and rally. What time?
11 o'clock, July 4th, 1996. I think by the time this goes on the air, it'll be over with. So.
Uh-huh. Well, nonetheless, it will have been a successful event. We will all toast that event.
Hopefully, yeah.
Yes.
Then the 4th of July barbecue by the Common Threads Coalition.
I see.
5 o'clock.
Wow. So they got, okay. I think I expect you to do a full blow-by-blow analysis on your show on Friday, folks. Expect to hear some heavy stuff coming down there. Actually, I won't hear a word, but maybe I'll hear about it.
And then Friday night is the Candlelight Concert at City Hall. Sleepers protest.
What about the love-in? Aren't you going to have a love-in, perhaps?
No, that's a sex show.
Wait a minute. Well,
we'll get the cameras from television, community television, and film everything.
We invite people to bring candles, but, you know, if they...
Everyone goes topless and the men go bottomless.
If they want to bring some Kama Sutra oil along, you know, I wouldn't have an objection.
Cool. And safe sex, of course.
Well, and there might be some heavy sleeping later on.
Heavy sleeping. Okay, well, that's... something to be considered.
The name is Freedom to Feed, Freedom to Sleep.
Dig it.
Anyway, We're gonna get some cameras, and that's an idea. Can you get cameras for the force? Are they all checked out?
I could probably arrange.
Well, listen, this tape is gonna suffer in quality because we're in the midst of a cleanup here. They are doing their five times a day this. We get to clean up the pod, so to speak, all those PUDs, and we pod it up. We pad around in our pod, cleaning up. So we're putter around in our pod.
Heavy sucking.
What's that?
Heavy sucking.
Heavy sucking?
Yeah.
Hey, Bob.
What kind of pod are you in?
It does suck, no question about it.
Hey, Bob.
What's that?
Why do cowboys always have shit on their noses?
Tell me, Uncle Mike.
They're always looking for love in all the wrong places.
Well, I see. Well, of course, that depends on what your tastes are, right? I don't like the smell of that one, though, I gotta tell you. Well, I'll tell you what, I'm going to leave you political activists to your devices, and I hope that you're successful in all your July 4th activities, and the other kind of bit of sober news I have is it doesn't look like I will be out before the 27th unless I really do start a hunger strike. And then they really do decide to release me early, which apparently is what's happened in the last hunger strike. They dumped the guy out of jail when he did a hunger strike. So it could be a one way to get out of here. I don't know. I'm going to wait till I hear from the Coalition on Homelessness and Food Not Bombs, see if they want me to try to do a hunger strike in here around the issue of access to the law library.
That's against your constitutional rights. They can't do that.
They should be able to find a guard.
There's a junction.
Right. I mean, I think it will be an attempt to put pressure on Hennessy and the other jail officials to act, and we'll see what whether I'm going to do it or not. I'm frankly in no way concluded I'm going to do it because really nobody here except me wants to use the law library, and the prison legal services guy Harrington said only about 15 such requests have come out in the last year. So it's a
brand new jail, but you know they. $130 million on it, you'd think they would have put a law library in it.
Well, yeah, also there are a lot of people who may be discouraged and who aren't using it, who aren't even requesting because they know it can't. So I'll keep you posted on what's going on with that. And also we've got some people hopefully working on the Modoc County angle. And I understand the National Enquirer is going to be approached on this whole issue. And, well, you can discuss that with your audience or not as you wish. And I want to say hang in there, Anthony. How you doing, guy? Anthony?
Yeah.
All right, then. You have a good one, and you too, Mike.
Yeah, soon.
And front and center, Becky. And I'll talk to you all later.
I'll see you soon.
All right. Bathrobes, take over the world.
And I'll let you go. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, and that was a conversation from Robert Norskon, direct from County Jail 8. And now I have found the beginning of the Purusha Obluda interview that took place on Wednesday, and I'll play some of that for you. You're listening to 96.3 FM Free Radio.
Okay, here is a line. Let's see if maybe this is KKUP. Okay, I just pressed one. Hello, Robert. You should be able to hear me directly over the air. Will you say something now?
Yes, I am. Hello.
Hello. Well, you're in a very noisy location at any rate, Robert. But,
no question about it. We're on Ward F here at the County Jail 8.
Okay, well, we can hear you just fine now. We have just finished up a half-an-hour interview with Dennis Perrone, who's the heart of the medical marijuana initiative. They got 800,000 signatures. It's going to go on the ballot.
All right.
I'm now going to move from that over to the question of the homeless, of what we do about feeding people and so on, and what our PCP system, I call it, our prison, court, police, court, prison system,
mm-hmm.
PCP.
Yeah.
It knocks you out. It hits you over the head and knocks you right out if it gets a hold of you. How it's going. Robert, how long ago was it that you gave away the fatal bagel and got arrested?
The fatal bagels, yes. Those were given away back in October of 1993 at Civic Center Plaza in San Francisco.
Okay, so you were picked up at that time. How did they nail you? The day that I went up and did this and got arrested, I got released after a couple of 3 hours. With me, just one cop car, maybe two, drove right up on the sidewalk and surrounded me and handcuffed me and so on. How did they treat you?
You know, I think it was a similar incident, though. I've been witness to so many of those arrests, some of them more dramatic than others, because I've been with Food Not Bombs on and off for the last 8 years, that they all kind of blur together. But I believe I was sitting down on the lip of the fountain, the large fountain that is in the Civic Center Plaza Park, right across from the mayor's office and City Hall, and I was ladling, I think it was either rice and vegetables or soup and vegetables out of a bucket, vegetarian food, and giving out bagels from a bag, and I'd served about 10, 12, 13 people when Officer Lindo came up to me and said, "You're going to jail." And I said, "Okay, but can I give these bagels away?" And he said, "Nope." And he grabbed the bagels, took the soup, and I believe they threw both away and dumped my butt in the can, so to speak.
They threw the bagels into one can and you into another.
Exactly.
At some point or another, you ended up being the guy that got tried. Was that in part your desire? Did you want to make a test case of this, or did the state lottery just hit you?
No, it wasn't that I wanted to make a test case of it, because Food Not Bombs has had an extraordinarily difficult and negative experience with the courts. The courts have shown a real desire to cover the asses of San Francisco politicians, whether they be liberal Democrats, so-called liberal Democrats like Art Agnos, under whom the first injunction against Food Not Bombs was filed, or more so-called conservative, more out-front anti-homeless mayors like Mayor Frank Juggernaut Jordan, who just left office, or Willie Brown, Slick Willie, or Whitewash Willie, as I call him, is currently in office. Judges have ignored blatant police brutality against homeless activists nonviolently trying to give away literature and food, most notoriously in the case that you followed, I'm sure, of Keith McHenry a year or two ago, when he had to go through a whole gauntlet of rigged charges and preposterous allegations and high bails and incarcerations, and eventually had to plead to a misdemeanor just simply to get this stuff behind him so he could go out there, serve more food, and essentially organize people to resist this kind of oppression.
Yeah, it looked to me like they had Keith set up for an 8-year jaunt to prison behind a couple of felony convictions, and with this day and age of three strikes and you're out, this is a mighty weapon. It really is. If they once have somebody in there, believe me, it is easy to arrange for a third crime to occur while you're inside. That is not difficult at all.
That's true. And I think that, though, in answer to your question further, in the past, for example, in the case of Sarah Menifee, who was the individual right before me who was taken to the edge of trial, she kept demanding a speedy trial, and they dropped her case. She's a poet and an activist with Homes Not Jails, and a Food Not Bombs worker, and a general friend of the homeless, and a writer. And she was, her response to these charges was to do what I did, which is to demand a speedy trial, and they dropped the charges. Well, in my case, for some reason, they refused to drop the charges, and they took me directly to trial so quickly that Food Not Bombs attorneys didn't want to help because they felt they had no time to prepare the case. So I ended up in the hands of an incompetent former DA named Kathleen Umrine, who did her best under the circumstances, perhaps, although it's hard to tell. She was a friend of one of the municipal court judges and got a sort of out-of-county appointment. She was from Marin County. But once the case was over, she dropped it like a hot potato and declined to do the kinds of investigations I thought were necessary. And I was convicted in a 5-day jury trial, which involved the jailing of my main witness, again, Mr. McHenry, who was put in jail on the first day of my trial and released on the last day with apologies, saying that they made a mistake. But, of course, it was too late for me, and attempts to get this overturned on appeal because of this particular problem, and also the fact that the judge had cut the restraining order that I had been arrested under. I was being charged with contempt of court. That was the actual charge, because I had violated this court order, which over 1,000 people have been arrested for, but only I have been taken to court for. Actually, I and one other person, Keith McHenry, were the only two actually taken to the trial stages. McHenry's case 2 years before was dropped when it was pointed out that the permit process for which was required to get a permit had been removed by the city as a political move to get Food Not Bombs out of the parks and away from the public spaces where they were embarrassing the mayor and other city officials by showing the extent of homelessness and hunger in San Francisco. Keith's case was dropped. My case was not. The jury was not informed of the full extent of the court order and the history of what went on. My chief witness was jailed. I wasn't allowed a necessity defense. They called in an out-of-town judge, Robert Barkley, from Modoc County, which is a tiny county in the far northeast of the state, to try the case. He initially in the voir dire would not allow the word homeless to be used or discouraged it severely. And Ken, of course, most recently, 2.5 years after I was found guilty and he sentenced me to 2 months, even though the district attorney and the public defender, but my attorney, David Beauvais, both agreed that there should be no jail time for this so-called crime, that it wasn't a crime at all, that it was, you know, a new policy was being used in San Francisco. He refused to alter the sentence. In fact, he refused to give me community service. He refused to allow me to go into home arrest or home custody. And instead, he said, you go to jail. And my reading of that is that he actually is sort of part of the, called in by the old guard in San Francisco, which perhaps some of the new guard, since Willie Brown is still arresting people, you know, at a merry rate for sleeping outside, or his police are, without any interference from him. And I'm here in jail for that reason, serving a 59-day sentence, reduced to, I think, 40 days, because they reduce all sentences by about a third if you have good behavior.
Okay, that 40-day thing is assuming that you're going to be okay, right? That you're not going to cause any difficulty.
Well, of course, that's an interesting question, because I do intend to bring to the attention of prison authorities the fact that this whole new jail that I'm in downtown here in San Francisco, it's called County Jail 8, has no law library for any of the inmates. None of the inmates has any access to a law library except through the very dubious expedient of a law student who comes in, like, he may visit you once a week and give you some Xeroxes. I mean, it's a complete farce, really. There is a law library a block away, but the sheriff's department will not provide staff, or claims it doesn't have the finances to provide the staff to walk you a block to the law library, which can be done not necessarily outside, but through the internal tunnel system, which connects this jail with 850 Bryant Street, the Hall of Justice, just right next door. So I may, in fact, run into some problems here. I mean, I tend to be completely legal in my organizing. I'm trying to determine from the inmates if they're interested in, securing their legal rights. Many of them are.
Yeah, that's a crucial one, too. It seems to me that's an obvious excuse not to allow people to help prepare their own defenses, and it's a vitally important one in most jails. Typically, if you're in a jail and you want to call out these days, you absolutely must call collect. And if you're going to call an attorney, all too frequently, in my experience, the people inside tell me they call their attorneys and they get an answering machine. The answering machine can't accept the collect call. It's very carefully done. Very often, folks, if you're very poor and you're assigned an attorney, there's no guarantee you're going to get a competent one.
Oh.
And there's no guarantee you're going to get one that's going to take your telephone.
And it's almost
calls.
Sure that you're going to get, if you get a public defender, you'll get someone who's so overworked and essentially is sort of machine assembly lining you. I mean, my cellmate has been in here for 4 months without having seen an attorney. He saw her once, and she then left him here to rot, and he's been trying to get back to her since repeatedly without any success. And, you know, in the absence of getting access to an attorney, you just, it's vital to have access to a law library. And
you're listening to an interview that was conducted between Parusha Abluda and Robert Norris Kahn from County Jail 8 on, took place on Wednesday, July 3rd, and I'll continue with that interview.
People are, but also in all the other pods in this jail, and his response is, okay, we'll help you file a lawsuit. And so I am now going to attempt to get a writ of habeas corpus to bring the issue of the law library before the courts, the Superior Court, sometime in the next few weeks. Even if I am released, and that's one of their responses to dealing with these kinds of protests, to get you out of here, he claims, does Nate Harrington, the head of the Prison Legal Services, that the issue will not be moot because it will be still an active case. I'm also trying to get this Judge Barclay disqualified because he received an ex parte communication, a letter from Neil Coonerty, owner of the bookshop Santa Cruz, who essentially said that I should be jailed for a longer period of time. I was a bad guy, you know, a violent character, so forth and so on, or had organized violent demonstrations and such. And
well, you have been pretty active over there in Santa Cruz, you know. I know you've been on the nonviolent side and that the other guys make that part up, but I can see where some of them might really like to just lock you up and throw the key away on the three strikes rather than have you in their hair anymore, Robert.
Well, you know, Neil Coonerty is, you know, that may be, he may have, you know, may hate me a great deal, but to go after someone for serving free food and try to use that as a way to remove him from the scene, I regard as pretty low. And I think that there's a real issue here, not just for me, but for, and not just for Food Not Bombs, but for the society generally, for anyone who wants to maintain the rights of poor people in public spaces. I think you're going to hear from Becky Johnson shortly in Santa Cruz. I spoke to her this morning. She said she was going to call your show.
Yeah, she's due to call in about 3 minutes or so.
So I'm going to leave shortly, but she can certainly update you on the whole situation in Santa Cruz, which has really acquired a whole new dimension because of the actions of the police in essentially rousting a church either last night or the night before in order to go after illegal sleepers. And the issue of my being in jail here for serving free food is, to some extent, is a moot one because San Francisco, though they have been confiscating food from Food Not Bombs on occasion at demonstrations, interesting, they do it at demonstrations and not at other times, they have not actually been arresting food servers en masse. They did one other arrest this last month, and that was Keith McHenry when he started serving oatmeal outside my prison, my jail, in order to, they're maintaining a vigil at 850 Bryant Street from Monday through Friday in case anyone wants to come down and help.
What time, Robert?
I believe it starts at 8:30 in the morning and runs until 10, and that's 850 Bryant Street. And if you want to help, you can give a call to 415-386-9209. That's Food Not Bombs in San Francisco, 415-386-9209. If you want to write me, I can give you an address, or perhaps you already have it to give the listeners.
Why don't we, I'll write it down. You're going to need a pencil or a pen and a piece of paper.
Definitely. Go grab a pencil.
Robert Norse Kahn.
K-A-H-N, right.
Okay, and his number, he's got it.
My number around my wrist is 147-2209.
147-2209. He's in City Jail number 8, F Pod.
F as in Frank.
Frank Pod. F-P-O-D. F Pod 41B. And that's at 425 7th Street, San Francisco 94103.
And I also urge people to write a letter, even before you write a letter to me, write a letter to the paper about the injustice of arresting people for sleeping or for sitting down. I understand Palo Alto is facing an anti-homeless law very soon. That's going to be a real disgrace.
When I'm in about 3 minutes or so, I'll be talking with Becky Johnson, who's been active in Santa Cruz, and I've been doing a lot of work with the local Food Not Bombs chapter in Palo Alto trying to prevent this sitting on the sidewalk ordinance from going through. So in the last 15 minutes, we'll be talking about what's happening right in our own communities here, folks, down in the South Bay. It's not just up in big, bad San Francisco that they're hauling people off to spend 2 months in jail for trying to feed somebody. It's happening right around us. In Palo Alto, Robert, we've been making a serious investigation, and as far as we can find out, there is zero problem in that city caused by people sitting on the sidewalk. If there's no problem, why are we about to pass an ordinance that's going to throw people into jail?
Merchant paranoia, and unfortunately it's political election time, and the politicians are jumping on the bandwagon. Arrest the prostitutes, harass the homeless, you know, generate a little bogus support. And I really hope that people stand firm and speak about the importance of elementary human decency in situations like this, the right of people to sleep at night, the right of people to use public spaces even if they're poor, and the right of people to share food with each other unhindered by the political imperatives of whatever regime is in power.
Well, good luck to you, Robert. I hope that you survive whatever time you're still going to have to do there in City Jail Number 8. Just quickly, how have you felt? Are you getting along okay?
I'm doing good, but if people want to come and visit, their visiting hours are 12 to 1:30 on July 4th and on Saturdays. And on Sundays, they're from 9 to 11. You got to show up at 8. You got to show up early in the morning usually to sign up. But if you're a hardy soul and you want to check out somebody in an orange jumpsuit for 20 minutes, that's where I'll be.
Right. I think it's good for all of us to drop into jail once in a while and see just what those places are like. And I know this is too much of a good thing for you, Robert. I hope that whatever pressure is being put on it from the outside, and Food Not Bombs and Keith McHenry are helping to do that, that you may not have to do the full time, but whatever period of time you do, it's ridiculous that you should be there.
Write a letter to the paper and phone a local talk show, talk about the issue. That's the way to change it.
Okay, thanks very much to Robert Norse Kahn, and I'm going to hang up now, Robert, and hope that Becky calls me in the next minute or so, and we'll be on the air with her.
Thanks a lot, Purusha.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
The program is Purusha's Views, the Views Express.
Good morning, Bathrobes Pierre.
Good morning from the big house, Becky.
So I hear that you have been written up in the street sheet, San Francisco street sheet.
Yes.
Not to be confused with the still missing Santa Cruz street shit sheet.
That's true. That's true. I'm hoping that possibly a new editor will rear her attractive head and offer to do some shit sheet work, but I'll have to see if that happens.
Yeah. Wonder who she might be.
Yes. The street sheet is, of course, San Francisco Monthly that homeless people sell on the corners. And we sent them a lot of stuff last month after I got jailed. And unfortunately, we kind of missed their deadline, and they weren't sure what to write, so they kind of put in only a very small story. But it's always better to be written up in the street sheet than it is to be written up on FPOD here at County Jail 8. If you get written up here, you get to go a longer sentence. It's somewhat more formidable. Written in the street sheet, however, is the following. It's Breathes Food Not Bombs activist jailed, sentenced for feeding the hungry on June 17th. Robert Norse began a two-month sentence for feeding hungry homeless people. Robert is the only soup server out of more than 1,000 arrested in San Francisco to be imprisoned for feeding the homeless. Order of the City Hall Sleepers protest, now in its third month in Santa Cruz City Hall, which calls for an end to the sleeping ban. Santa Cruz Municipal Code Section 6.36.010A. Public sleeping is punishable by a $162 fine. A harsher misdemeanor sleeping law makes instances of sleeping within 48 hours punishable by up to 6 months in jail. Needless to say, there are essentially no legal places to sleep in Santa Cruz for the 500 to 1,500 homeless people living there. Meanwhile, on the San Francisco front, matrix arrests continue, even though DA Terrence Hallinan shredded 39,000 matrix tickets several months ago. That's from the July issue of the street sheet, currently on sale on the streets of San Francisco. And hopefully there'll be a longer story in the August issue, maybe something more elaborate about the City Hall Sleepers protest. I understand you have been having some front page news coverage about police harassing people at sleeping on church property.
Yeah, the Holy Cross with Reverend Mike Marini has been housing, not housing, but allowing homeless people to come up and sleep both in their vehicles outside of in the parking lot, and also to set up sleeping bags and tents on the grounds.
They've actually been ticketed? They've ticketed people, or they're just harassed?
No, I don't think anyone's been ticketed. The police have come up several times to do that. And from what I understand, Reverend Mike Marini held them off, made them go away. So he's a very courageous man.
You
who
actually talked to Marini, perhaps interviewed him for the
I have not, however. My associate producer in Club Cruise, Charlie Phillips, has...
Chump change, Charlie?
I don't know if I'd call him that myself.
Hi there, Charlie.
Yeah,
you're out there.
Yeah, he did talk to Reverend Mike Marine, and perhaps a more formal interview will follow. He's definitely is not holding the position that city council is. That homeless people have to stay awake all night.
Oh, well.
And to not break the law. He thinks that's ridiculous.
It's really an ideal time for listeners to write a letter to the Sentinel or the Metro Santa Cruz or San Jose Mercury News immediately saying that now is the time for change in the sleeping ban law, and now is the time for reinstitution of a legalized campground area for homeless people.
Well, one of the things that Reverend Mike Marini told Charlie Phillips is that he wished that there were other churches that would also set up programs similar to what Holy Cross is doing.
Apparently
since
there was.
Since there's such a great need for
Garfield Park Church had such a program, and of course the neighbors there also drove them away. One of the reasons I understand being that because there's so few churches doing it, people tend to cluster, and there's no, you know, it becomes difficult for one or two churches to cover it.
Yeah, here Holy Cross had 40 to 60 people coming, and it was growing. You know, I mean, as people found out about more and more people came.
And are people being discouraged, or are they continuing to go back there?
No, it's still ongoing. The city is kind of wavering right now. You know, the initial article says, well, the law is the law, we got to crack down. And now they're kind of wavering. They don't quite know what to do. I imagine that they're going to kick them out in a week or so. That's my estimate of what will happen.
Well, I hope that the City Hall Sleepers Vigil publicly invites everyone who's kicked out of Holy Cross to come on down to City Hall and join the scrumptious accommodations there right in front of the library, right across the street from the library.
Yep, and bed down on those comfy bricks.
And if that doesn't work, there's always Scott Kennedy's backyard, often a possible site for a sleep out.
Well, Scott Kennedy said is considering proposing a change in the ordinance allowing people to sleep in their vehicles at churches.
He wants to three, right?
Yeah, he wants to change it from three to allowing the church itself to decide, set their own limits.
That's fine.
These are these little tiny Band-Aid type solutions that Scott Kennedy proposes.
If you get more than one or two churches to do it, it's fine. And of course,
you need like about 50 churches to do it, and then you got something.
Want to go to sleep, buy a vehicle. You know, I mean, that's an interesting theory. Maybe Scott can start a vehicular purchase fund for the rest of the homeless people.
Well, it is true, though, Robert, that there are an awful lot of homeless people that are living in their vehicles. There's another huge number of homeless people who are sofa surfers who are, you know, living a couple days in different people's houses.
My annoyance with Kennedy comes from the fact that he has, over years, claimed he is an opponent of the sleeping ban, and specifically those portions of the camping ban, 6.36.010, A and B, and Part of C, which make it illegal to actually fall asleep or cover up with blankets. He's actually said he opposes the whole camping ban, and not just the sleeping ban. And he continues to tout this liberal posture, and has done so as recently as a month ago when I was still at liberty. And so for him to be proposing these minor changes, that strikes me as a retreat from his previous position. He could use this opportunity to make a very full statement and say, this shows quite clearly how my long opposition to the sleeping ban and the camping ban are really quite appropriate.
Well, it's probably all your fault, Robert.
But he
doesn't. He would have done something, but you pissed him off. Now he's not going to do it.
He has an opportunity to speak out on the issue, yet instead he chooses to show his real position, which is, you know, essentially to make very minor cosmetic changes. And this is, unfortunately, I think, been his substantive position for the last two or three years. I suspect that when he first entered office, he actually did have a somewhat more humanitarian and sensible position on this issue. However, he's become a proponent of the politically possible, and I don't know whether this is because he's become chummy with the police department, or whether he has ambitions for higher office, or whether because he's, you know, he's interested in other aspects of city administration which require accommodation with the more reactionary members of the city council. I don't know. All I know is that he's changed, and his position on this basic law is an unconscionable one, which is shared by his buddy, RoboCop Rotkin, who is our mayor, who actually somewhat more amicable than Kennedy in many respects.
And this is the other thing that Charlie Phillips reported was that Mike Rotkin has been going door to door talking to the neighbors outside of Holy Cross. To ask them their views.
I see.
And even Charlie kind of got upset at that.
Maybe you should go door to door, or I should say vehicle to vehicle to the homeless and ask them about their needs. That would be a little more appropriate for socialist pretender Mike Rotkin, also a community professor studies, professor up at the University of California. I think his students and the university community should confront him on this issue, and I think that I encourage people to write a letter to the Santa Cruz Urinal, which is also known as the Santa Cruz Sentinel, because now that the matter is before the public eye, now is the time to start really changing, changing the climate of opinion, but changing the political dialogue. You have an election coming up in the fall. You already have people campaigning like David Silva, for Santa Cruz on reasonable and significant change platforms. It's time to get the issue into the papers, and it's also, we're in the middle of a situation where you have people like Sandria Roth and Pat Ring and Michael Cessna, also known as Gideon, are coming up for sleeping trials and contempt of court trials and all kinds of bogus charges, which essentially spring from a First Amendment protest at City Hall.
Yeah, that case is coming up on July 11th. At 8:30 in the morning. We don't know which judge it is yet. That hasn't been determined. Possibly Judge Kelly.
Kelly, as I call him.
Right, and I encourage free radio listeners to mark their calendar and come down to the court to hear those cases, because the city is really trying to railroad something.
I encourage people to write letters to the paper and to call the City Hall authorities, namely the mayor. More important than letters to the paper, because the politicians couldn't care less.
Do both. Yeah. And besides, Charlie and I will be there with videotaping that court date, so you'll have opportunities to...
In the halls of justice, the only justice is in the halls, as I always say.
Well, and that's where we set our camera up, out in the halls, and we can do interviews with people.
Can't control any of the court proceedings or predict what what these errant judges are going to do, and the best way to get these things resolved is to put such pressure on city authorities that people, at least those involved in the city charges, like charges under the injunction and charges of violating the sleeping ban, are all dropped because of angry pressure from the citizenry, which says, why are you enforcing these vicious laws to start with and spending our money on top of it? If that kind of pressure reaches the city, and I don't mean so much through private calls to City Hall as through public demonstrations, through public letters. Who knows? Somebody might even start a hunger strike. I'm thinking of starting a hunger strike in jail here. So we'll see what happens with that. Actually, the issue would not so much be the sleeping ban as we're being denied access to the law library here, which is a matter of a lot of concern to local inmates. Even in the Santa Cruz County Jail, I think you have access, or do you? I don't know. Maybe you should find that issue out. Do people in the Santa Cruz County Jail have access to the law library?
That's a good question. I'll have to do some research on that.
Not that the law is much good these days, but hey, you've got to try, and sometimes you succeed.
Now, Robert, we have an event this very day, this evening at 9 p.m.
I'll try and be there, but I don't know.
Maybe you could break out. Come down to the candlelight concert.
Nothing would please me more.
It's at 9 o'clock today at City Hall at 809 Center Street. And Kristen Anderson, Coral Brune, and the name of our third singer.
I'm tired of sleeping inside.